So today we have a fun interview for you. We're talking with Phyllis Kerr, author of Social Media Marketing E-Learning Kit for Dummies, and co-author, along with Amy Porterfield and Andrea Vall, of Facebook Marketing All-in-One for Dummies, two resources for users looking to promote goods and services on Facebook. Coming from one social media professional to another, I wanted to share with you more about Phyllis Kerr and her work with social media. So Phyllis, it's great to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show.
Many of you may not know that Phyllis was an award-winning performer and educator known as Miss Phyllis before she got into internet marketing. Can you tell us more about this? You know, it sounds really fun. What did you do? Did you play any musical instruments? And how long did you do this for?
Well, I'm actually old enough to have two careers under my belt, and one of the first ones was a performer. I was a singer-songwriter, and I performed, and I went to shows and festivals, and I did that whole traveling musician thing. And during that time, I also taught general music, and I had choirs, and, you know, I was the music teacher. That's what I did, and I did that for a really long time. And I was also an Iowa Arts Council artist, and I got lots of grants, and I went everywhere and did all of that. So that was my world. It was a big, wonderful musical world. And I was always the geeky girl with this. I mastered my own CDs. I had electronic keyboards and mixers and microphones and huge speakers, and I was my own roadie, and I traveled all over. You know, that was what I did. And then eventually I just got completely burnt out with the whole thing, and packed all of that Miss Phyllis paraphernalia in a great big Tupperware and put it in the basement and just put it aside. And I moved to Florida, and I moved to the beach, and I just walked on the beach twice a day, and I completely redefined who I was and what I was going to do going forward. And basically what happened is I just fell into the computer. I completely fell into everything about it, and I was, because I was of a kind of geeky girl, I really went into it like a research librarian, and I tried to learn everything. And so during that time, I created something called Functional Art Catalog. And this was a high-end functional art gallery, online gallery, and I represented high-end functional artists from all over the country, and I promoted their things online. The problem was that was a little bit away ahead of the curve, and the prices were too high. People were, at that time, afraid to put in a credit card for thousands of dollars to buy something. So eventually I closed that up too, and kind of dove into the social media. And what I found in social media is, again, I took to it like a fish to water. It just made sense to me. It was very easy to do. And I dove into that also. And that's kind of how I ended up getting the book deal. And getting the book deal, this is, I really want to make this, you know, a short little thing about how I got into it. But basically, this is why you need to have really good friends online that know what you do. Because I have a friend who has written 15 books for lots of different publishers, traditional publishers. She was talking to one of her editors, and they mentioned a particular book project, and she thought of me. And she recommended me. And that started the process to eventually getting the Facebook Marketing All-in-One for Dummies book that I co-wrote with Andrea Vall and Amy Porterfield.
So one question that I ask everyone who switches career paths, can you elaborate more on your first social media gig? Like, when was it, and who was it for, if you can share that?
Wow. So this goes way back in my brain, and I'm having a hard time remembering who my first one was, but I remember that I was promoting myself. And in order to get the book deal, you have to have a really big platform, a social platform. Traditional publishers look at how many people are following you on Twitter and how many friends you have on Facebook and how active you are on YouTube. They look at that, and that helps them decide if they are going to take you on as an author, because a lot of traditional publishers want the authors to do the marketing. So for, I was my own client for a long time because I was building up my platform, my social platform, in order to be able to get these types of gigs. Now, since that time, I've done a lot of social media marketing campaigns for a lot of people, authors, musicians. Right now, I'm working with the people who created the Passion Test. This is Chris and Janet Atwood. And they're doing a new project called Hidden Riches. And so we have, and they have an international audience all over the world, so I'm helping them with their social media. But as far as my first gig, I would have to say it was me.
That's actually a really good point because, you know, a lot of people, they don't think to start with themselves, to kind of use themselves as a, you know, almost like a guinea pig.
Right.
You know, to learn, you know, how to build their own presence so that they can then, you know, carry that forward into other projects they're working on.
A lot of times that is exactly the guinea pig idea. I remember my first Facebook page, I basically said in the About section, this is just a test page so I can test things out for my clients, you know. So you don't have to follow me, but if you want to, go right ahead. But this is where I do my research. And it was the same way on almost every social, you know, every social account that I went into how to test it, how to work it, what works best, so that I could bring that to my clients.
And that's really good advice. So let's stick with the book topic. So you authored two books, Social Media Marketing E-Learning Kit for Dummies and Facebook Marketing All-in-One for Dummies, along with Andrew Vall and Amy Porterfield. So when you were, you know, getting ready to write your first book, can you tell us more about the process? Like, what was the, you know, driving force to decide to write a book, and how long did it actually take? Because I think one of those books is like 600 plus pages.
Yeah, the Facebook Marketing All-in-One for Dummies, which now, by the way, is in its second edition, and we'll probably have a third edition by the end of the year. It originally took us 9 months to write the book.
So that must be really tough if you're trying to write a book about social media, and, you know, in 9 months, a lot of things can change.
Oh, yeah. And that's the problem with traditional media, traditional publishing, is that's exactly what happened. We were done, and then Facebook made some big changes, if I remember correctly. This was back in 2010, to business pages. And we had to basically stop the press. And we had to pull some of those chapters and rework them before the book was printed. And we've had to do that several times with reviews and the second edition. And we always have our ear to the ground for big changes because we want to time those releases to be able to capture what's new so that the book is up to date. And the book is really amazingly up to date. And most of the book is marketing advice. And even though Facebook might redesign the page so that the link that was on the left is now on the right, and or, you know, or now there's an admin panel that drops down from the top, or all this stuff, the ideas and the functions are still there. It's just in the book they might be in a different place if Facebook changes it. And the interesting thing about writing a dummies book, and I, you know, people come up to me all the time that they want to write a dummies book, and I always ask them to first stop and breathe and think about it a little more, because honestly, writing these two dummies books completely kind of rewired my brain. I'm a musician. I'm an artist. I think in that way. And a dummies book is very linear and very step by step. And if you have steps on how to do something, you have to do it exactly the way that the dummies books want you to do it. It's very, very structured. And a lot of people don't realize this, but when you write a dummies book, you're also formatting it for them as you go, which is very different. A lot of people think that, oh, if I just sit down and write the book, I'm just going to write it in a Word document and send it off to someone. Not so with the dummies books. They have templates, and you have to stick to it, and you have to format as you go. So, you know, that's a little inside scoop on it. And here's the thing. To write a dummies book, you basically have to write the table of contents three layers deep, like an outline form three layers deep, before you even start writing your chapters. So you have to really have that kind of orderly brain to write a dummies book. So just a little insight of that. And they're very challenging, and they're very hard to write. I think we figured out one time that it takes about an hour to write a page because of the all the research that has to go in, and everything has to be exactly right. Everything's double, triple checked. The images have to be formatted a certain way. It's quite a process.
I mean, it definitely sounds like it. I mean, considering, you know, you have to, one, deal with, you know, all the changes, but then deal with, you know, all of the challenges, you know, with writing, you know, in that medium.
Right. So, and chasing around social media really, truly is like chasing around a little dust bunny. It's very hard. And if I have any advice to anyone who wants to write a book of some kind, try very hard to make it an evergreen subject. Try not to have specific things, especially if it deals with social media, because it's going to change. And if you have any screenshots of any social media site, I can guarantee you in 4 months, they'll be out of date.
I mean, I could definitely, you know, relate to that on a lot of my own videos that I do.
Right.
I have people emailing me or commenting and asking about, you know, hey, I can't find that button. And, you know, like I said, it didn't really go anywhere. I mean, it moved, but the functionality is still there.
Right, exactly.
So let's move on to internet marketing for a few questions here. So can you share one common misconception that people have about internet marketing with listeners?
Sure. Most people think that internet marketing is magical money, and it's just not true, at least not in my case. You have to work at it. You have to refine it. You have to drop the things that don't work. You have to relaunch things. It's always an ongoing process. Even if you have a product, you have to reinvigorate it. You have to redo it. You have to. It's always something that's going on. It's not something you just set in motion and magically money just starts dropping into your bank account, at least not in my experience. And you have to get really, really good at listening so you can provide people what they actually want instead of trying to force them into buying something that you created. And honestly, that's the biggest lesson. If anybody wants to, they think, oh, I have this great idea and I'm going to sell it online. No, you have to flip that around and go listen and hear what people really want and see what they're paying people to get. And that's where you go and create your product.
Yeah, it's all in the market research, you know, and listening to customers, not just saying, hey, this is the product I want to put out.
Right, and coming from my world, I was a musician. I would write a song that I liked, and then I would play it the way I wanted to play it. But actually, what you find out as a musician, that it's all about the audience. It's always about taking care of the audience. They're the ones that are going to go buy your CD, and they're the ones that are going to pay to come into your gig. And if you're not taking care of them, you're not in service to them, then you will not make it in music. And it's the same way in internet marketing.
So if I'm a brick-and-mortar business and I'm looking to leverage the internet, what is one thing I absolutely must do besides, you know, just having a website? Because I think a lot of businesses already have that. If I want to, you know, stake my claim and, you know, and really leverage internet marketing for my business.
Right. You absolutely have to get your Googleness in order. You have to understand how Google works with local businesses. You need a local Google page. You need your G+ account, all of that. You need to be able to show up in search on a mobile device when someone is driving through your town and they're looking for something to do or they need something that you have. That you have to be so in with Google and use everything that Google offers you to really rock that space. You know, a lot of people don't realize that on a Google Local page, when you're business comes up in a search, you have the opportunity to put a coupon there for free. So if someone pulls you up on search, there's extra stuff there. There's a coupon. They can bring it in, and you've brought somebody in off of the street into your business. So I think it's really important to just understand the Googleness and make it work for you. And then, of course, you have to get your Foursquare in order. And your Facebook page needs to be a places page. And actually, there's a whole bunch of things if you're a local business that you really need to do online. But just being able to show up correctly in search so that people can really utilize your services on a mobile device, that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I mean, I see a lot of businesses these days, you know, they rely on, you know, just having a sign you know, in their window, or, you know, they rely on word of mouth marketing, which is, you know, which is still very valid. But, mm-hmm. you know, if they want to capitalize, you know, you're right. They have to have, you know, all of their Googleness. By the way, I like that term. they have to have their Googleness in order.
Yeah.
So that, you know, if somebody happened to be in that location, you know, that they can capitalize on, you know, that their presence and get right. them into that store.
That's right. Now, I travel a lot by car, because I prefer to do that instead of flying. And I have to tell you, I have eaten and bought products and been to certain hotels based on what comes up on my Google. So it's very important to make sure that you're coming up there, because there's a lot of people that move through a space. It's not just the people who live there. It's the people who are moving through the space that you want to capitalize on.
It's a whole other layer that you
yeah.
work yeah. with. Mm-hmm. So you're on a fair number of social networks. Which is your favorite network to use and why? And I have a feeling you're probably going to say Google.
Well, it was funny. I started making some notes around this. And I have to say, I have a love-hate relationship with Facebook. So I can't say it's my favorite network. I love Twitter. I could spend days there, nonstop days there. I absolutely love it. I love getting lost in it. It suits the way my brain works. It's wonderful. But I love Google Plus. I go there, I go explore, I find really cool people that I don't find anywhere else. I love the conversations that are happening there. I love Google Hangouts. I like it a lot. But I also have to say, YouTube is on daily here for me. It's my TV. It's where I go to for almost everything. So there's so Google and YouTube, even though YouTube is owned by Google, I have to say those two are my favorites at the moment.
So can you elaborate a little more about Facebook, you know, your love-hate relationship with Facebook? Because I'm sure a lot of listeners, you know, they have a Facebook page and they're probably looking at Google and saying, oh, well, hey, I don't have time for another network. You know, it seems like it's really dead, even though it's not. What is it about Facebook that, you know, that you like, that you don't like?
Oh, okay. Well, confession time. So here's the thing. Facebook is the biggest party in town, period. We know this. This is where most people go. And depending on your buying demographic, you might find that most of your audience is on Facebook. But they're not on Facebook all the time. They might log on, you know, once or twice a week, maybe just on Sunday afternoons, whatever. So it's a lot of work to reach somebody who's only on Facebook one day for an hour. Okay, so this is why it kind of drives me nuts. So everybody's there, but they're not all there all the time. Now, if you have a younger demographic buying audience, they are sort of moving away into other places that you might not be marketing on, like on Instagram. So you have to think about that. Where is your demographic? I mean, that's a classic first question you ask whenever you work with a client. Where is your buying audience? And they always say, well, they're on Facebook, but are they really? Are they really on Facebook? So I still think it's all about search. And so the reason they absolutely need to be on Google Plus and with these local pages is because everything that gets posted on G Plus is indexed by Google, and so it's going to help you in your search rankings. So even though it's not as fun as the Facebook party, it's the most practical place to be if you're marketing your business and want to make some money.
And I actually agree with all of your points there. I mean, a lot of people, you know, they think that, hey, just because I post something on Facebook, everyone's going to see it. You know, it doesn't happen.
Right.
It's only when that person logs in. And, you know, if they don't log in but once a week, I mean, they're missing a lot of updates.
Right. And that's where then you have to spend all this money on promoted posts and ads and things. And so the money can really rack up in terms of Facebook if you don't kind of watch it, because it will, you know, $5 here and $15 here and $50 here and then $300 here. And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what just happened? And did that really work for me?
And in most cases, it probably didn't, considering, you know, you have to outlay all this money just to advertise something. And you know, what was the ROI of it? Like,
right, exactly. And the people that are making money on Facebook aren't actually making money on Facebook. What they're doing is they're moving people from Facebook to their email list, and then their email list is what makes them money. So in a way, you can say, yes, I'm making money on Facebook, but the actuality of it is you're moving people from Facebook to your email marketing.
So we're going to stay on Facebook for a couple of questions here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we talked about Facebook for Business. It's a hotly debated topic. What three recommendations, if somebody did want to put their business on Facebook, can you recommend, if they want to set up shop? Like, what can they do to, what should they be doing, if they want to sell some products?
They need to understand visual marketing, and they need to create a library of visuals that they can share on Facebook a lot. They need to understand that their cover image now, they can have a call to action in it as long as they're staying to that 20% rule. And they should trade out their cover image a lot. When Facebook changes over to this new newsfeed design, the images are going to be awesome in the newsfeed. So they need to design these images at 600 by 600 and, just start creating those so they have them ready. The other thing is don't buy fans. Period. Buy fans. I just took on a client and she had all these fans and nobody was engaging with her on the page. It was just such an odd feeling to be on her page to have all these fans and nothing was going on. And so when you look into Insights, it's all these 25-year-old men in Lithuania who don't speak English, and they were just dropping off the likes off her page, daily like that. And they're probably not real people, as far as all that goes. So, but it felt good to have that big number, but they weren't real people. So don't buy fans, period. And then the third tip really is schedule time to actually be on Facebook. A lot of people just want to set it up and go somewhere else. But if you really want to reap the benefits of being on Facebook, you have to be there and you have to talk to people. You have to reply to people. You have to be there. And you can't reply 3 days later. You need to reply, a few minutes after they've replied. So make sure your alerts are set up so that you know when people are working on your page and you can go there and be there with them.
So I want to go back to the second point you brought up about buying fans.
Yeah.
So can you maybe elaborate a little more on that for people? Because, of course, there's a lot of services out there that say, hey, we'll get you, thousands of fans for, pennies or a few dollars here, a few dollars there, versus buying Facebook ads to bring in fans. So
yeah.
Can you maybe elaborate on on which one is recommended, if either one?
Right. I'm okay with doing page like ads. They're called page like ads on Facebook. Those are okay to me because first of all, you are buying an ad space that tries to represent your page in a way in a space that people would like it. But when you go and buy a fan, what this is in a lot of cases, they're not real people. They're just computer programs that open up accounts and then like the page. And all it does is give you this big number of emptiness. It doesn't help you at all because when you go to make a post, there's no engagement, there's no sharing, nothing happens on the page. And people are, look, she's got 30,000 fans, she must be very popular. It's just an illusion.
Yeah, people are fixated on these huge numbers.
Right.
Hey, this is an influencer. Well, not necessarily just because they have a number. I mean.
Right, exactly. And so and here I am, I have three launches right now, and our fan count is not up there where I would like it to be. So what are my options? Well, I could buy fans. Well, I'm not going to do that. Well, I can buy ads, page like ads. I can do that. I can make sure that the client has put this in their email marketing. I can make sure the client has events that are bringing people to their email list so that they're more excited about that process than the number of fans on the page. So it's a really, really tricky thing. You also have to develop what I call promotional partners. And these are people that in some ways you might want to call them affiliate marketers, but in this case, these are people who are promoting for you just because they love you. And you have to find those people in your world, your customers who love you so much that they would love to get an email from you that says, hey, you know, we have 4 posts coming up this week on Facebook. We'd really love you to keep an eye out for it and to share it with your world. And in exchange for that, I have a free coaching program coming up just for my promotional partners and blah, blah, blah. So in other words, find the people who love you and give them something wonderful that they want in exchange for promotion.
So the new Facebook newsfeed, you know, we talked about, you know, being more visual if you're a business on Facebook, you know, and creating content, you know, it's going to look great in the newsfeed. Do you actually have the new Facebook newsfeed yet?
No, and it's so frustrating because I'm the one who writes about it. You would think they'd give the writers, you know, the first show of it.
The people that I know that have gotten it have been people that, you know, they don't even use Facebook, but like once a month.
I know. I think they did. They must have done something with that and thought, well, we'll just show it to a few people who aren't on Facebook very much first, because that's exactly what's happening. And every now and again, I'll see a screenshot from someone who has it, or I'll hear somebody who has it, and mostly people are saying, it's going to take a little getting used to. But we do know how it's going to work, and we know what the image sizes are going to be, and we know how, you know, it's going to change. So you can be prepared for that. And that's why I said you really need to get your visual marketing in order to really take advantage of the new look.
So Facebook is moving towards a mobile-first approach. You know, this is where, you know, they've built it with mobile devices in mind, you know, in addition to obviously having, you know, a desktop version, you know, that also has the same functionality, but works, you know, really great for the user. So how do you feel about this? And are there too many changes for users to adapt to?
Well, that's back to that love-hate thing I have with Facebook again. I think what they're trying to do with this Facebook Home app that they just released is they're trying to capture that younger demographic that's moving away. They're moving into Instagram and other instant messaging systems that's becoming their Facebook. So I think that they're trying to re-enliven that younger demographic, and they're trying to design something that is very fluid on a mobile phone that fits their lifestyle. That's my feeling about it. But also, you know, the boomers have really moved into Facebook enough to make it a little bit uncomfortable for our younger demographic sometimes. So I think it's a way to remedy that situation. I think it's a way to remedy what's going on with the younger demographic. And yes, people adapt to these changes. They bitch and moan about it, but they end up adapting to it. Now, there are a lot of people in G+ I talk to all the time, and they're saying, I quit Facebook a year ago. It's the best thing I ever did. You know, but these are the rare people that are doing that. Even in my personal enjoyment of social media, I'll spend time on YouTube and Google+, and then it's like, well, I guess I'll go to Facebook. And so I'll do that. But they still have not figured out the mobile thing perfectly. The straight up Facebook mobile app is terrible. The Pages app is really not as functional as it could be. And then just the mobile interface on a browser is not very good. So they really haven't got it together in a comprehensive way yet. But I think they're working on it because they know exactly where everything is going. It's all going mobile, so they need to get it together to stay ahead of that.
So do you think that's actually like a limitation of Facebook development, or is it an actual hardware issue? So, for example, maybe the hardware can't keep up.
Well, that's an interesting question. That's a very interesting question. I hadn't thought about it that way. I think that the hardware, that where Facebook wants to go with how they interact on a phone, the hardware can't keep up with. Yes, that they haven't figured that out. But I also know that Facebook does not necessarily listen to the marketers, that they're their first, they might listen to their larger brand partners, but they don't listen to that middle section of marketers who are marketing on Facebook because these changes don't support what they're trying to do. Now, mobile newsfeed ads seem to be working pretty good, but as more and more marketers start using that, you can imagine on a mobile phone, it could just be a series of ads, you know, all the way down the stream, and that can be very frustrating to the end user. So it's very complicated. I would not really want to work for Facebook to figure this out, honestly.
That would actually be really terrible if all my newsfeed was ads.
Well, you think about it right now. I can go in and create an ad, a promoted post ad or a sponsored story ad, basically, and select mobile users so that it shows up on mobile phones. And, you know, a sponsored story is basically a post that you're posting on your Facebook page. Now, if the post on your Facebook page is highly salesy, that's what's going to show up in your feed. So, and there's no filter for that. Well, there might be a filter coming in for that.
Hopefully there's a filter. But again, we never know. So,
right, exactly.
So what's next with you? Are you working on any new books, any materials, any projects or events? Anything you want to talk about?
I've always got something going on. I'm working on a product to help small businesses understand Google. So that's definitely a project that we're working on right now. I have Social Media Manager School that I developed with Andrea Vall, which is really awesome. So that's socialmediamanagerschool.com. And we have a rockin' Facebook group, which, by the way, we didn't even talk about groups in this whole thing. I think Facebook groups are amazing and super-duper spaces. And then I also have an event coming up in Texas, May 17th through the 18th. It's going to be awesome. I'm very excited about this because it's the very first time ever that Amy Porterfield, Andrea Vall, and myself are in the room at the same time. You know, we have never been together in real life in the same place at the same time. And we've been working on this book since 2010. So this is very exciting for us because we feel like we know each other really well. And we've met each other individually, but not all three of us at the same time. So it's very exciting. And that's socialresultssummit.com.
So if people want to contact you personally or maybe on one of your social channels, how can they do that or where should they do that, I guess?
Well, you just Google me. And the trick is you have to spell my name correctly. That's the trickiest part. So it's PHYLLISKHARE. And if you just Google that, you'll see my website, my Twitter, my LinkedIn, my everything, Facebook, everything. And that's probably the easiest thing to do. And also I have an about.me page, so you can go about.me/PhyllisCare, one word, and you can find everything there too.
So, Phyllis, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today, you know, learning about, you know, your internet marketing background, you know, your favorite social networks, your upcoming events. You know, I really appreciate you taking the time to, you know, to speak with me.
Great. I had a good time. I love talking social media. Do it again anytime. Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes our interview with Phyllis Care. If you would like to be featured on our next podcast, feel free to visit my website, www.christiankonline.com/contact. We'll see you next time.